Patty is in line at the quick checkout counter and has 15 items in a check, it doesn't have to make me crazy. It makes everyone else crazy, but I go, well, I guess she made a mistake. You know what I mean? And everybody says, she does it every time. I know her. I've seen her here. And I go, well, I guess she makes a mistake more than once. You know, what can you do about it? And then I go to the post office, and I remember how I used to be angry, and I used to be the one that said, I know they paid them. I used to work in a post office. They paid them enough. I can't believe that they got four people out to lunch and only one person working. And it's a, so now everyone else is mumbling that, and I get to say, yeah, but think of how she feels. She keeps looking up at this endless line of angry people. I said, wouldn't it be great if we all went up and told her how we appreciate how hard she works? And people say, hey, that's a great idea. You know, and then one guy says, bullshit, how hard she was. He says, I pay my taxes. They ought to have more for you. I go, well, whatever makes you happy. You know what I mean? And that's the gifts of the program. You know, I've substituted all these things. How do you learn to be patient if you go in the post office and there's no line? You know, how do you learn? How do you learn to be patient if you get on the freeway and there's no cars? I mean, God knows what he's doing. He has to teach us these lessons, you know. And it's like the gifts go, and I just like to kind of make this analogy to my everyday life. I talk about going to the gym a lot. Well, when I first went to the gym, I was as rigid as I was with my abstinence. I would go at 6 o'clock for a 6 a.m. aerobics class. The class was from 6 to 7. Then I would shave, shower, get dressed, get my decaf, come home, get home a 7:45, and from 8 o'clock to 9:30, I would speak to sponsees and sponsettes. That was my routine for years, you know. So I went to the gym, and everything was fine. The class was over. I had, like, sweated profusely and felt like $1 million, you know. Looked at all them young, tight bodies. Everything was great. And all these sinks were taken. I wanted to shave. I said, I can't believe this. I got to shave and get out of here. I'm supposed to take a shower first. And I went in, and not only were all the showers taken, there were two guys waiting online. Well, I got berserk. I went, I said, what the fuck is going on here? You know, to myself, I said, I got to shave and shower and be home for my OA calls, you know. And God said, Richie, why don't you tell all these people who pay the same amount as you to get out of the way? Richie's in a hurry. Get out of here. Richie's in a hurry. He's got to shave. He's got to shower. And I started laughing. See, that's my God consciousness. And I started laughing, and the guy says, what are you laughing at? I said, oh, I was just thinking of something funny. He says, I don't think it's funny. I got to get to work and all the goddamn showers are taken, you know. And then I get to be grateful again. And these are really everyday things that happen. If I just seek that God consciousness, you see, I get to seek the patience. I go into the, oh, you know, I shared this once at a retreat, and I got a love note from someone who worked in the post office, was pissed off at me for saying that you always had to wait in the post office. I said, no, I didn't mean it, you know, derogatory. I said, it's a fact, you know, and it's the same thing. Go to a bank on a Friday and expect there not to be a line. You know what I mean? So I go into the post office expecting to spend an hour. And if it's less, I'm full of joy. I go, wow, that was great. You know what I mean? And it's like I don't have any expectations. It's just acceptance, you know. Whatever's going to happen is going to happen, and I get to make the best of the situation. It's like Dr. Paul says in his chapter, you know, if we focus on a problem, the problem increases. If we focus on the answer increases. The problems, to me, were my defects of character in living, you know, the 7 deadly sins and all the rest of the 500, whatever it was I had. The solution is living the way God wants me to live, the principles of this program. So now I get to practice patience and kindness and tolerance and understanding and forgiveness, compassion and charity. And while I'm doing that, guess who benefits the most? Me. So that's the way, you know, it's worked for me over the years. It says, you know, if you listen to the words in these steps, it's, you know, someone said to me, if we read the black print on the white pages, there are no problems. But when we start reading in between the lines, we have a lot of problems. And it's real clear. The program says, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, We try to carry the message to other compulsive overeaters and practice these principles in all our affairs. These principles are the spiritual principles that come from the Bible. You know, I always think of that song from Sweet Charity. If they could see me now, that old gang of mine. Because when I get on my knees and I go to church and things like that, I think of the guys back in New York who go, Billy Graham, what are you, you know, Bishop Sheen, they call him. It's like, who cares? You know, I don't need to be ashamed of God, but I also don't need to get on a soapbox and save the world. I need to be a living example of God's handiwork in all my affairs. You know, I know a lot of people that preach. I know preachers. I know pastors. I know priests who preach but don't live it. You know, I'm very proud of the fact that I can talk the talk and walk the walk better than I talk the talk. So I don't have to be afraid of flaunting God. I don't have to be afraid to say it's just as easy to be a kind, loving, forgiving human being as it is to be judgmental, critical, and always right, you know. Justifiable anger, I'd like to just talk a little bit about that. In fact, I think I'd like to revert to the big book, which I was reading this morning. And, okay. It is plain that a life which includes deep resentment leads only to futility and unhappiness. To the precise extent that we permit these, do we squander the hours that might have been worthwhile. But with the compulsive overeater whose hope is the maintenance and growth of a spiritual experience, this business of resentment is infinitely grave. We found that it is fatal. For when harboring such feelings, we shut ourselves off from the sunlight of the spirit. The insanity of food returns and we eat again. And with us, to eat is to die. If we were to live, we had to be free of anger. The grouch and the brainstorm were not for us. They may be the dubious luxury of normal men, but for compulsive overeaters, these things are poison. Not only did I find out that that was true and that was what was, you know, making me self-destruct all those years of my life, but to turn it around is the pure joy of living. I mean, I had a lot of things to be justifiably angry about. Losing my parents, losing my wife, all those things, poor me, poor me, poor me. But the truth of the fact was, and I'll just read on a little, what it says that follows that. Okay, it says, this was our course. We realized that the people that wronged us were perhaps spiritually sick, like ourselves. Though we did not like their symptoms and the way they disturbed us, they, like ourselves, were sick too. We asked God to help us show them the same tolerance, pity, and patience we would cheerfully grant a sick friend. When a person offended, we said to ourselves, this is a sick man. How can I be helpful to him? God, save me from being angry. Thy will be done. We avoid retaliation or argument. We wouldn't treat sick people that way. If we do, we destroy our chance of being helpful. We cannot be helpful to all people, but at least God will show us how to take a kindly and tolerant view of each and every one. And that's how I've been able to live my life. To know that most of my anger, being upset, and being out of sorts with other people was directly my own responsibility, my inability to accept them exactly for who they are and where they are, and to realize that they too, like me, were sick people. See? And the more that I get to recognize that, the freer I get to be me. There's another thing in step in the 12 and 12 that talks about, I've read it so many times I could almost say it verbatim, but I'll paraphrase it. It says, it is pointless to get angry or upset at people who, like ourselves, are going through the pains of growing up and are to some extent, like ourselves, emotionally ill. So when I go to a meeting where I used to go and everyone would get up there and dump would piss me off. Oh, God, that idiot is getting up there again and going to hear about her sister. You know what I mean? What comes in my mind is it is pointless or angry to get upset at people who, like ourselves, are to some extent emotionally ill and going through the pains of growing up. So now the same person gets up and I go, she's gone through the pains of growing up. Isn't that great to watch her grow up, you know? And it changes my whole attitude towards people, places, and things. It's just to simply recognize that nobody is perfect starting with me and to accept people. And I just want to close my portion of this portion. What we'll do is, after I finish now, we'll do that silent break kind of thing. Or, okay, let's take a group conscience. How many people would like to take a 10-minute formal break? Okay, how many would like to just go on and go potty and coffee quietly as we can? Can I have a raise of hand? Okay, well, we'll take a formal break, it seems to be more. There's a lot of abstainers. So what we'll do is that I'll close at 3 o'clock, and in a few minutes we'll take a break till 10 after. We'll come back and you guys will share for, say, 20 minutes on steps 4 through 9. Then I'll do the Ask It Basket, which is kind of full. And then we'll finish the day with 10 through 12. Okay? So what was I just talking about? Is anyone paying attention? I wanted to finish in a few minutes something that I... Huh? Pains of growing up. Blank. Totally blank. Right? I guess I'm finished, okay? So what I'd like to do now, let's see. Should we do the hug before or after the break? Okay. When we come back, we're going to do a 10-person hug when we come back. So we'll come back at 10 after, okay? Thank you. We got to write them out. See, that's what my lot in life is, to be surrounded by beautiful women. Okay. Now we have to line up facing the audience, and big feet, and arms around each other's waist, okay? Now, this is called a jelly roll hug. And the secret to it all is patience. Don't move down. Stay where you are. Hold your ground. We will come to you. Got to have trust and patience. So we start very slow. Hold on, guys. Take it easy. And then when you get to the end, go ahead. Everybody takes a step in and squeeze it. Thank you. Okay. It's your turn to get a little jelly roll going. It's Dennis's favorite. Or Lake Erie, Ohio, where I was doing a retreat. And it was great. They had a whole committee that spent 15 minutes giving hugging lessons and all that. And all I could tell you is that when we break at the end, we're going to do a bigger hug. So more will be revealed. Okay. I think what I'm going to do is, can someone bring me the Ask It Basket? I'm going to share on whatever's in here, then turn it over to you guys for about 20 minutes or a half hour to share on steps 4 through 9, and then we'll take the last hour for 10 through 12. Okay, what methods do you use to carry the message to overeaters not in the program? I think it's real simple. Just be an example of God's handiwork. Try to be the kind of person God wants me to be. I've simplified it by every day trying to be St. Francis. Okay? To try to be a channel of hope and faith and light and harmony and joy and all those things that it says in the prayer. Mostly to ask God to have me to try to understand rather than be understood, to love rather than be loved, to comfort rather than be comforted. And if I just try my best to reach that spiritual perfection, that's the best way for me to carry the message. Again, it's my actions. The world judges me on my actions. It doesn't judge me on my motives, you know. So if I'm out there being... one of the things on Dr. Paul's tape coming out here that he said was the true essence of love is loving another person is wishing them well, to really sincerely wish each and every one of you well. But then the real true test of love is to do something to make that come true. See? So I ask myself each day, what can I do to enhance and enrich people's lives? And that's what I try to do. And I try to treat each and every person as if God sent them to me personally. see. And some of the things I've heard over the years in this program is that you're as close to God as you are to the person you love the least. So before I start hating someone, I think how close do I want to be to God today? And I think of him being over my shoulder as I'm conducting myself with you. So that's the best way that I get to carry the message to people that are not in the program. And one other thing I'd like to share, again, as OA experience, I was a keynote speaker for this East Coast Convention for 2,000 people a few years ago, and the theme of the weekend was Free to Be Me. And I was on a panel, among other things, with two other people called Free at Last, Free to Be Me. And this first gal shared something beautiful about Martin Luther King's father, who was abused, misused, persecuted. And he was a man whose wife and son were so famous. And they said to him, you know, because of Free at Last, Free at Last, they said, can you honestly say that you didn't get angry or hate some of those people that threw you in jail and physically abused you? And he said, there is nothing that big to make me that small to hate another human being. So I've carried that with me. And this other gal on that panel said that to the extent that I, and I've carried this in my heart, to the extent that I could accept and love you unconditionally, each and every one of you in this room, exactly for who you are and where you are at this very moment, is the extent that I could be free to be me. So whatever limitations I'm putting on you, then I'm putting them on myself. If I don't put any limitations on you, I can get up here and curse and not care if you're offended, and talk about God and not care if you're offended, and tell you about how I eat and not care if you're judging me. I'm free to be me. I love being me. I spent my whole life trying to be what I thought you wanted to be so that I could impress you with what you wanted me to be when you didn't even give a shit. See? And then I found out that if I just be me, amazing how many people love me for what I am, this imperfect creation of God, you know? So I'm free to be me today because I can tell you one of my barometers is that there is not a person in this world, including all my daughter's boyfriends, that could walk through that door that I would get angry or upset that they're in the room or even uncomfortable. That's how free I am today, because I don't judge anybody. I accept them exactly for who they are and where they are. I know how much these kids are hurting. He doesn't want to not be responsible for his baby. He doesn't want to not be a kind and loving human being. He doesn't know how yet. That's how he learned. He learned from his own experiences. So I have to practice that compassion and understanding to try to understand that I'll never figure out what motivates an individual to behave in a manner that isn't according to my beliefs, you know. My stuff is that I want you to behave based on my experience and wishes. When you don't have my experience and wishes, you got your own. So let you behave the way you want, and all I have to do is behave lovingly and let you know it's okay. You want to take out, you know, a burrito and eat it now? I love you. Love the shit out of you. I probably love you more than if you didn't eat it. You know what I mean? And that's what gives me the freedom to be me. So I wanted to mention that. I self-sabotage myself and pay and pay. See, you failed again. You're off on a toot again. How do I stop this? Help. Okay. The only failures I've ever seen in OA are the people that don't come back. Other than that, we're all successes. I mean, the only failures are people who don't try. Obviously, whoever wrote this note is still trying. So I could tell you from my own experience that there are people in this program who came around for 9, 10 years and couldn't get it. And all of a sudden, one day, they got it, and they've been asking it ever since. I have a friend of mine that held on to 50 or 60 pounds for years. All of a sudden, he lost it this year. And I said, what happened? Like, did you get like a spiritual burning bush? And he goes, I haven't the faintest fucking idea. He said, all of a sudden, one day, I got willing, and I went to it, you know. And that's how it works, you know. God knows our schedule. Nobody but God knows our schedule. Our job is to love and accept each and every person and trust that they have a different path than us, maybe. You know, I don't know why I was picked out of all millions of people out there to find this program. I don't know why when I did, I was chosen to find abstinence after 2 days. And like someone said, abstinence, we don't lose it. It's like virginity. You don't lose it, you give it away. I don't know why I haven't been willing to give it away. Part of it is something else I heard. Someone said, make yourself an abstinence that you can't break, and then you'll never break your abstinence. And at the same thing, Free to Be Me, I was on a panel of 100-pound weight losers and more, and this gal shared that for 8 years she lost 110 pounds and maintained it for 8 years, but never had more than 30 days abstinence because she would do perfect for 29 days, and at the end of the month, when she got a period or whatever, she would, like, eat these huge meals and have, like, a pizza for dinner. And she would break her abstinence and start over the next day, but she never really gained weight or anything. So a friend of hers said, why don't you make that your abstinence? She said, what? She said, that you eat perfect for 29 days, and then you get your period, and you have a pizza, and that's your abstinence. And she said, what a great idea. So she's been abstinent ever since, and she hardly ever does it anymore because she gave herself the freedom to do it. You know, so those are the kind of things that I've learned over the years. That's why you have to share so I can learn those things. Is there a list of the opposite feelings, or can you give them? For instance, anger, love, forgiveness, etc. Okay. I could start with the seven deadly sins, and those of you who choose to write it may. Okay. The opposite of pride is humility. If I'm going too fast, stop me. The opposite of anger is love and forgiveness. The opposite of greed is going too fast. The opposite of patience is going too fast. Okay. Okay, we got pride and anger. Okay, the opposite of greed is generosity. And while you're writing, I'll just share on that. I used to think that meant putting a lot of money in the basket or putting in a dollar for one soda. And some wonderful OA person wrote me a letter and said I was the most generous human being she ever met because that I took the time, no matter how busy I was, to answer her letters and to be generous enough to give of my time and self to just the person who was writing me. And I don't realize that the true meaning of generosity is giving of myself. And the greed that I used to have was me, 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 you know. The next one is gluttony, discipline, lust is purity of intent, you know, and it talks about sex in the big book, page 69 and 70. And it talks about how everyone has different opinions, but we all have problems with sex. And it talks about that no matter what we choose as our desirable goal, that we ask God to lead us towards that and honestly try our best. And so the purity of intent to me is real simple, and I'll share it now because this is for Tom. Is it Tom? Okay. In the 12 and 12, in step 12, now I've read this 8 million times because I do have a lot of opportunities to act on lust, you know. It's not that I'm anything wonderful, but the odds in this program of women to men make it, like, real easy, you know. And being that I lost all that weight and I have a lot of recovery, and God working through me is an attraction to people. No matter what they think is the attraction, it's God, you know. So it's real easy for me to take advantage of that, except that I've read this about 800 times, and it's in step 12, and it says, when boy meets girl on OA campus and love at first sight follows, trouble ensues. That we need to both be long enough abstinent and know that we are compatible on a spiritual, emotional, and mental foundation based on fact and not just wishful thinking. Because if we don't, later on, some underlying defects will crop up to sabotage this whole relationship. So purity of intent means to me that when I come to Palm Springs and I lead a marathon, and after the marathon, a gorgeous woman, which is each and every one of you in this room, comes up and says, I can't tell you, you were speaking from my heart. Everything you said was exactly what I was thinking. I can't believe how compatible we are. And I really, you know, I'm attracted to you even physically. And how about we get together tonight? Now, if I'm practicing purity of intent and honesty and all those things, and I go by that guideline of being long enough abstinent and knowing each other that we are compatible on mental, emotional, and spiritual foundations based on fact, as opposed to that wishful thinking of, you're right, I feel the same way. When I caught your eyes in the audience, I felt that spiritual contact, and let's do it, you know what I mean? Then I'm acting on the lust. But what I get to do, and this is my own experience, even when I, you know, do it in Houston, Texas, I say, well, you know, there's a lot of people who write to me, and some of the joy of my program is writing back to these people. Why don't you write and get to know each other through the mail? And maybe, you know, if God's will, so we get together sometime, we will. But by then, we'll kind of get to know each other better. And I've done that with 3 or 4 different women in the program who have come to visit family from out of town. We spent a week together, and we realized that we'd be much better being friends than being lovers, you know? And it's very tempting. But the book tells me that if I recognize that I'm harming other people by acting on lust, and I recognize it and try to mend my ways, I'll be fine. But if I continue doing harmful things, I will eat. This is not a theory, it is a fact from our experience. So that's scary enough for me that the book tells me I'll eat. So just like in my abstinence, over the years, I can honestly say that I've been pretty good in my behavior between lust and purity of intent. I've also had my slips. I've also had places where a woman would convince me that I'm too serious and can't we just screw our brains out if there's 2 people attracted? And I go, you know, that makes a lot of sense to me. And then I suffer the consequences. See, then I suffer the consequences of the remorse and self-pity. And I'm not comparing a sexual experience with a meal, but it's the same kind of behavior, that compulsive behavior without thinking it through. So if I'm practicing purity of intent, no matter how much my mind and disease tells me act on it, I want to do God's will, which is to be purity of intent. What are my intentions? My intentions are to get rid of this lust, and instead I have to, like, do it God's way, is to say, it's a great idea, but I think we should pass on it. And maybe somewhere down the line, if it's God's will, it'll happen. Now, a lot of guys that I've sponsored in this program have said to me, that's bullshit. You know, all my life when I was fat, I was rejected by women. Now that they're coming on to me, I'm going to take advantage of it. And I go, hey, if that's what you need to do, go for it. But then I'll read them what says in the book, that you're going to eat. And I've seen them go out there and do it. I've seen them go out there and do it. So they're doing what I my footwork for me, proving to me once more that the book knows what it's talking about. So that, I didn't mean to get too carried away on it, but again, it's my experience because it's a toughie for me. You know, it's real tempting. It's real tempting. But I choose to do other things instead. And what it says following that whole thing, it says, well, now what about those of us who can't seem to get into marital situations? How do we deal with the loneliness? Will OA help us with that? And then it says emphatically, yes, if we do certain things. If we throw ourselves into service and constructive fun projects that married people can't even do. Surround ourselves with friends from OA, both male and female, and the loneliness will disappear. Now, that's my experience for over 8 years. I have a host of OA friends, male and female. I get involved in the OA shows every year. I get involved in retreats and conventions. I go to dances. I do things that married people have trouble doing because I'm away from home every weekend. You know what I mean? And if and when I find somebody who I'm supposed to be in a healthy relationship with, I'll compromise my life, which I've done, you know, in the past. But in the meantime, I'm having a ball. You know, and I remember having Aunt Blanche. And everyone used to say, poor Aunt Blanche, never got married, never had kids, you know. And poor Aunt Blanche said, I don't know, I've been to Europe twice, I've been to the Orient, I've been on about 20 cruises. Aunt Blanche hasn't had a tough life, you know. I believe some of us are cut out to be single. You know, I have a good friend of mine, David Brennett, a comic. He said he could never understand why people get married 5 and 6 times. He says it's like you walk out of your house and someone hits you in the face with a bag of garbage. He says, and you walk out the next day, the same person hits you with the same bag of garbage. He says, are you going to walk out the same door 6 times or maybe go out the garage? You know what I mean? So it's like, I found out, you know, I was married 7.5 years, and it wasn't the greatest years of my life. I have a lot of fond memories, but I like being single. I like the freedom that I have of my lifestyle. And I'm very happy because I am surrounded. And I don't want to get too graphic, but I have ways to relieve my sexual frustrations without harming other people or anything like that. And I get to share that with other people on a one-to-one basis, and they laugh and they think it's great. You know what I mean? And what it does, it saves me from self-destruction and hurting other people. Then there's envy. I'm going on. The envy, the opposite of envy is gratitude. It's real simple. You can't be envious if you're grateful. And I'll just tell you some tools I've used over the years. My first sponsor, whenever I used to get into envy, jealousy, self-pity, he says, let's play gratitude. And he would say, I'm grateful that you're in my life. What are you grateful for? And I'd go, I'm grateful for my abstinence. What are you grateful for? And after 2 minutes, you forget what you were envious, jealous, or self-pitying about. And the other thing I used to do is do a gratitude list every morning, what I'm grateful for. So you start out erasing doubt, self-pity, envy, jealousy, and all that bullshit, you know. So those are the tools. And the last one is sloth. The opposite is action. Whatever you're procrastinating about, get off your ass and do it, and then you're not practicing sloth. It's really simple. And those are just the 7 deadly sins. Whoever wrote that question, I could go over every character defect, but I would suggest this. Get the blueprint for progress from Al-Anon, the inventory, and in that inventory, in the last chapter, it talks about all these defects and what the opposite is. I learned a lot from that. How do you recommend dealing with a spouse who's down on program? I didn't have a spouse, but I had 2 daughters. Stacy, my oldest daughter, one day, she just very calmly said to me, if that phone rings once more with one of them fucking OA people on it, I'm going to rip it out of the fucking wall. Do you understand? And I go, what are you trying to say, honey? You know. And she admitted that without OA, she wouldn't even have a father, but that it was kind of getting to her of how much OA was coming into the house and all this brainwashing that was going on. So I shared it at a meeting. Now, for me, when I have a problem and I share it at a meeting, I get the feedback I need to get. If I don't share it at a meeting, I don't get feedback. So 2 people suggested 2 things. There's a chapter in the big book called To the Family Afterward. And perhaps if you would read that chapter, you would understand better what your family is going through. And perhaps if you suggested they read it, they would understand better what you're going through. And there's a pamphlet, and do you have it there? To the Family of the Compulsive Overeater. She's holding it up. How much is it? 10 cents? 15 cents. I will treat anybody with this problem to a pamphlet today. I did it. And I brought it home, and I read it, and it was just such a revelation. And I said to Stacy, do me a favor. When you get a chance, I know it says OA on it, but just read this pamphlet, and I think you'll maybe better understand what's going on. And from that day on, she's had her complaints about my time that I give to the program as opposed to her, and et cetera, but she's had such a much better understanding. So whoever wrote that, I suggest you get that pamphlet today. And also read to the family afterward. It's real funny, the big book. You got a problem with your family? There's a chapter called To the Family Afterward. You got a problem with your employee understanding your program? It's a chapter called To the Employer. You know? You got a problem working with other people? Guess what? It's a chapter called Working with Others. And those chapters have given me the solution to all these problems. So It's in the book, folks. How do you stop hating and punishing yourself? Well, the same way that I had to stop hating and punishing other people, I had to write about my resentment about myself and all those years I wasted and this and that. So the toughest thing for me is to practice tolerance, patience, kindness, understanding, compassion, and forgiveness and charity with Richie. See? So again, it's practicing these principles in all our affairs, on my own affair, you know. So what I have to do is lighten the fuck up, you know. Throw the whip away, and when I have a big meal, instead of hating and punishing myself, I got to go, hey, you're okay. And God says, you're cool. I go, I'm cool. He says, you're cool. I go, okay, that's cool. And that's it. It's just practicing the principles on myself. Please tell me how you write dialogues with God. Thanks. Okay, I'll tell you how it came about, too. I was sponsoring this gal, and she said, I write this dialogue with God. Can I read it to you? And I went, oh, shit. I said, go for it, you know. And she says, dear God, I don't know what I'm going to do about these big meals. And let's say her name was Alice. She goes, Alice. God, I don't know what I'm going to do with these meals. God, don't worry, Alice, I'm with you. Alice, what does that mean? How can you help me? God, just pray for the discipline and I will give it to you. And so on and so forth. And she read them every day to me for about 2 weeks and I would like, nah, 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 nah. Started to sound really interesting, you know? Started to sound really interesting. So I was honest, open-minded, and willing enough to try it. And I used to do it, and I don't know how it works, folks, but it works. Like, I go, God, I'm really fucked up today, man. I mean, like, what is this shit? I don't know what I'm going to say at this marathon or whatever. And he says, you're going to share your experience, right? I go, oh, I forgot about that. And I go on, and somehow I get the answers and the peace of mind that I need to get. Now, for some reason, I remember one day writing, dear God, I feel really stupid because I haven't dialogued with you in about 6 months. And he goes, that's bullshit. You've been dialoguing with me every day. You just haven't been writing it down. I go, oh, that's the point, you know. And I go on, and I realize once again, lighten up, just because I didn't formally write a dialogue, I'm always talking to God. You know, I'm in my car coming out here. I'm shucking and jiving with God. And I'm not paying attention to anything but God and the road, you know. So it's like, that's how it works. That's how you do it. You just get a pencil and paper, and you put your name and what you have to say to God, and then you put his name, and something will come for him to answer it. And if anyone thinks you're crazy, then we're both crazy. How do you deal with success now compared before the program? Well, for me, it's real simple. I know deep in my heart, to the gut and the core of my being, that I'm truly a byproduct of God's handiwork. And any success I have in any area of my life is a result of God's grace. And it's real simple. I had trouble handling how wonderful people told me I was for a while, and I shared it with someone who had a lot more years than me on the circuit, and that's what she told me. She said, you just say, I said, what do you say, like when you know, you know, you want to be humble, but you don't know how. She says, just say, thank you, thank you. So that's what I do. And people say, oh, you're wonderful. I listen to your tapes all the time. I go, thank you. You know what I mean? And we know where it comes from. So that's how I deal with it. It's just, and God wants me to flaunt it. You know what I mean? That's why I'm here. He wants me to flaunt it, to let you know. I was sharing at lunch with people. They say, you know, asking about being asked to do retreats and marathons. And the bad truth is that a lot of intergroups, they ask me because I'm a movie star. And they go, you know, every care unit and every eating disorder unit shows the movie Fatso as part of the program. And I was in that movie when I was over 400 pounds. You know what I mean? So they all know who I am. So they go, ooh, the guy that was in Fatso is coming to Cleveland. You know what I mean? So that's why they come there, and then God and I give them God. See, doesn't matter why you're here. It's what you get, you know. Sometimes, you know, what do they say in the poem? Sometimes you get what you want. Sometimes you get what you need. Sometimes you just get what you get. Well, whatever you need or whatever you want, when you get me, you're going to get God. So that's, you know, so that's God and my little joke. So that's how I deal with success. Did your dealing with your sexuality change during and after your weight loss? Considerably, because I never experienced in my life a woman being attracted to me physically as the very first thing. I mean, I had to win them over with my suave ways and my loving, compassionate being, because I was too obese to feel like worthy of a woman. You know, if a woman said hello to me, it was like time to celebrate. I'd buy her a ring, whatever. So, you know, ask her if my last name fit with her first name, whatever it was, you know. So the way that I deal with it is, again, to remember that I'm a byproduct of God's handiwork and not to misuse it or abuse it. And I always remember that, and just to be a loving person. And the hard part is to not let it become an ego thing, but to just be blessed and grateful. And what happened to me is, like, it was real scary, because within 1 week, three women told me that they just wanted to ravage my body because they were just so attracted to me, and, you know, my this and my legs and my hair and this and that, you know. And that scared the shit out of me, and I said, thanks, that's great, and, you know, I just thank you, God, you know, that I have that gift. And dealing with it again is, the program gives me a design for living, what I shared about being compatible on a spiritual, emotional, and mental foundation, to me, is the most erotic thing in my life with a woman. To feel spiritually, mentally, and emotionally compatible is the most sexiest thing to me, and nothing turns me on more than being with a woman who I feel that in contact with. It has to be good sex if you're there. Did you handle, and if so, how do you handle rejection? It's the name of my life. I mean, being an actor is constantly handling rejection. And it's just, you know, accepting that there's a lot of people that are different, and God's plan for me. If I'm rejected in relationships, if I'm rejected by my family, if I'm rejected in my career, in any area of my life, I don't feel rejected. I feel that it's exactly the way it's supposed to be. If it's not this woman, that's because there's something better in store for me. If it's not this job, that's because there's something better in store for me. Any area of my life, if I have that foundation that nothing happens in this world by mistake, that God has this plan for me, how could I feel rejected? I don't even, you know, that's another word that I don't relate to. You know, God bless you. What can I do about the one-year abstinence jitters? Abstain for today. That's all you got to do. And, you know, people say the one-year jitters, the two-year PMS, the three-year emotional binges, the fourth-year relationship problems. A day at a fucking time. You know what I mean? That's how I live my life. I don't buy into this shit. I don't buy into the people saying the only way to grow is to suffer. You know, the only way to grow is to skip that road of happy destiny and just plug on, you know. So I don't buy into that. You know, so many people say you can't have a relationship in your first year. You're not ready. Where does it say that in the book? Where does it say in the book that you get the one-year jitters? Where does it say any of that stuff? It's all stuff that people create. You know what I mean? I've heard people say, if you don't do this, you're not abstinent. If you don't do this, you're not recovering. These are their own ideas, their own conceptions of what the program is. If it says it in the book, I'll answer the question. But I don't know anywhere that says that you get the one-year jitters. What happened to me is, I was so busy recovering that I forgot that I had a year. You know what I mean? I was just so busy that it was just the days come up. It's a day at a time, a week at a time, and a miraculously forever. I can't believe that I'm coming up on 9 years. It's incredible. 9 years? I mean, this is like, this Christmas and New Year's will be my 10th abstinent, sober, and clean holidays. I mean, that's, you know, that's far beyond, yeah. That's far beyond anything I could have comprehended before I came here. You know, if I would have just had one day of that, I would have been grateful. And the only reason I got it is because I didn't have the one-year jitters, the 2 years, wackos, or the 3 year badoojis. I just had a day at a time getting a little bit better each day. So it's just things we like to create. You know, I'm an actor, so I try to keep all the drama in my life, in my career, and keep it out of the program. And someone taught me that real early. Said, Rich, you're an actor, right? Yeah. Let's keep the drama out of the program and keep it in your career. And that's, I think, a lot of us love the drama in life, like the one-year jitters. So just for today, abstain and the jitters will go. How did you learn to fight depression? Simple. I learned that depression is a result of regrets of yesterday or fears of tomorrow. And if I live just for today, there's nothing to be depressed about. Is there anybody in this room right at this very moment has any reason to be depressed, surrounded by loving people, talking about a wonderful program of recovery, feeling the presence of God in this room and the